Hi everyone, and welcome to another Uni Fellowship, Humans of Uni Fellowship, where we're going to be spending some time today getting to know Andy, who's on staff here with us at Uni Fellowship. The purpose of these Humans of Uni Fellowship is really to give you a bit of a window into people who've either formerly been part of Uni Fellowship, are currently on staff, maybe part of the student executive. Have had some sort of impact by or impact on Uni Fellowship. And so today we are finally getting around to our final staff member, Andy. Hey, mate.
Hey, thanks
How
for
you
having
going?
me. It's good to be here. What human number am I? Do you know?
Human number 7, I think.
Oh, look, theologically perfect number. Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Very, very holy. Very holy
Yeah.
number. Yeah, cool. Hey, let's kind of dive into things. Andy, a very important question that I've been pondering just this afternoon is what kind of impact is Macca's Monopoly going to have on your spending habits over September?
It's hilarious you mentioned that because I got in the car just before this and looked down in the passenger seat, and there was an empty McDonald's drink bottle. And I was like, oh no, Amy, don't tell me that's back on again. Can't tell the kids. And the kids were like, what? What about McDonald's? What about McDonald's? Yeah, so I said to Amy, this year we're going to really try and avoid that as much as we can. However, you do get good, lots of good prizes, and it is a bit of a win-win. So it will
It's a bit of a trap, isn't it? Hi, Anna.
Hey, Anna.
Hello.
We've begun the interview with a question about the impact of Macca's Monopoly on Andy's September.
So dangerous. I've recently moved, and there's Calorie Corner or Fast Food Central, as it's called in Kingston, and I can walk within 5 minutes, and play Monopoly is dangerous for maskals.
Risky.
So, Andy, tell us a little bit about your family then. We've heard very momentarily, who's in your family?
Yeah, so married to Amy, 5,110 days, or AKA 14 years.
How many hours?
Yeah, I'll get back to you on that one. And so that's great. Love her a lot. She's wonderful. She's the secret weapon behind me, even if I am a weapon. Yeah, we met actually when I was doing my MTS gap year, funnily enough. I've got two kids, Harriet, who is 8, just about to turn 9, and Henry, who is 6. And they're bundles of joy, fast and full. Yeah, love them to pieces, but keep me tired.
Righty-o. And they might come bursting into your Zoom at some point.
Yeah, I'm in the shed at the moment, and so who knows what might happen.
Cool. Hey, so you mentioned you met Amy during your gap year. You're obviously not natively Australian.
No. Yeah,
Give
so
us a
born and
background.
bred in the UK, in Guildford, as I would and still regularly say to people, just south of London. that's where I'm from. I moved out here in 2006 to get married and I became a citizen. I identify as an Australian now more than an English person. Although I'm still aware of the cultural differences and I still make little cultural mistakes as well.
Give us an insight.
I mean, I think one classic I tell people is just there's a slight difference in sarcasm. Sarcasm is usually loaded in Australia, whereas it doesn't really have any meaning in my experience in England. So you can joke at someone off the bat and it's just fun and it's actually a way of relating and connecting. And finding familiar ground, whereas here you tend to mean something by it. So that's caught me a number of times. And then there's other things as well. I think English people do complain a lot. That's really annoying. Australians are more generous in that way, but then I feel like Australians aren't as compassionate as English people, and there's a bit more of a she'll be right. So, you know, you kind of get injured and you'll be like, oh, you'll be right. And it's like, well, I don't have a leg anymore and I need an ambulance. I won't be right, actually. So there are a few little differences, yeah.
So you thrust yourself into the culture shock of Australia, 15 years ago?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was 15 years ago. Yeah.
So what actually led to you being, I guess this is kind of one of our core questions. I sort of want to ask out of order. What was the defining moment that actually led you to come out to Australia for a gap year?
Yeah, I reckon the defining moment will probably is just seated in me becoming a Christian, I reckon. I don't think it was actually, people saying, oh, you should go into ministry, or me having a bit of a God moment at some conference or something like that and being like, oh, I should do full-time ministry. I think the way I was converted, just God just got a hold of me, and I was just all in from the beginning. I think I'm a guy who is just quite ordinary kind of guy. I'm still quite an ordinary guy. I don't think there's anything particularly special about me. I don't think I necessarily excelled in much, and I don't think I necessarily disappointed in much either. I was just very vanilla. But what I did know was, I enjoyed socializing. I enjoyed having a bit of a laugh. I liked being center of attention and having fun. And I was, just a normal kid, really. I grew up in a Christian family, but that didn't really mean much to me.
Mm-hmm. Is that a classic Church of England?
No, experience? I was in a Great Baptist Church. That's what I grew up in. Just a normal kid. And I got made to go on a Christian camp, and I hate camping, really ridiculously hate camping. I oversee events. That's how I fit in at the uni fellowship. And so not on my watch will we ever be camping, or at least I will never be camping. I will either be in an Airbnb or there'll be a family emergency that means I won't be able to come along. I got made to go on this camp. It was my cousin's church kind of region group. I didn't know anything of it. And I think what happened there was I just had to listen for the first time. I never really listened to Christian stuff. I just didn't think about it. It just didn't interest me. Church was a bit boring, irrelevant. Old people went to it. Yeah, it's just something you kind of did. I didn't hate it or anything. It just didn't mean anything to me. I think as I listened for the first time, I think it was the first time I actually heard a Bible talk, like as in I sat and I was like, oh, I'm taking in what you're saying and I'm thinking about what you're saying, rather than just mucking around like I would at Sunday school a bit. Like I was the naughty boy at Sunday school. Okay. Whatever that exactly meant. I got sent back into the service and things like that. Mm-hmm. This guy was talking. I remember one night he was talking about the gifts you get when you become a Christian, and he said, the angels have a party. And I was like, okay, that's nice. You get eternal life, you like live forever. And I was like, okay, that sounds nice. And he said, you get to go to heaven. And I was like, well, that sounds nice. And he said, you get a second birthday because you're born again. And I was like, that's awesome. Because I'm going to get more presents if I become a Christian. That's really good. So that kind of just showed my level of just, I think, get it. But as we went through the evening, and as we finished the evening, as we stood up to sing, I just found myself like crying. Yeah. Just through the evening, I was just like, I just think I need to become a Christian. but I didn't really know why, but I just sort of knew I kind of needed to become a Christian. Anyway, I kind of shook it all off and ignored it. And then the next night it happened again. But this time it was just irresistible and all consuming. And I just knew I had to become a Christian. I just needed Jesus. And there was something that kind of just fell away. And I think I just saw that I was a sinner, that I was just ignorantly, naively, just living for self. I was just, life was just all around about me. And I needed Jesus. And so I was well scared, and I was like crying, you know, that kind of crying, which is that really embarrassing crying when you're like, and you know, you go to that level. I was at that level. And so I thought, I know this guy, I was like, I want to become a Christian. And he was like, okay, calm down. And so he chatted through with me, and he said, okay, I want you to pray. And so I just cried out to Jesus. And then it was after that night, I just was like, the Bible, that's why you read the Bible. That's why I read the Bible in church, because that's where God speaks. And that's how you get to know him. That's why people go to church, because church is awesome, because that's where God's people go to learn about God. And church is not irrelevant. It's completely relevant and needed, and where we, again, engage with God and with each other. And so all these things just like instantly began to fell into place. And it was really that moment, that kind of experience of just your eyes open. Like it was that 0 to 60, naught to, you know, nothing to everything in just an evening. And it was just from there, like a fire was put in my heart for Jesus. And that was it. I just wanted to tell people about Jesus as much as I could. To the best of my ability. And that's just what I was just sold on, basically. And
so when I became a Christian, my mum said to me, who, you know, was nominally Christian, she said, I don't like this cult that you've joined. Did your parents have a similar sort of reaction to your conversion experience? Did they see that change in you?
Yeah, I think they did, and they were cautious to start with. But then I think they were like, oh yeah, okay. And I got baptized and came into membership and just started serving in church. And just because I wanted to tell people the gospel as much as I could, to the best of ability I could within the time I had, then I was immediately looking to do that everywhere all the time. And then that's why little by little I got involved more and more in church and other kind of things to do with church and youth groupy things. And I knew I wanted to do a gap year. And so I just started saving, here's an admission, my Burger King job.
Yay.
And saved over a few years. And then so some plans I had to do, like a traineeship, that's what I was searching for and looking for, fell through. And a guy came and preached at our church in England called Pete Woodcock. And he was talking about Tassie, and I wanted to go to Australia. And so I spoke to him afterwards, and he gave me the contact of David Jones. So I emailed David Jones and said, hey, look, I'm really keen to do this, this and that. Can you provide it? And he said, yes. And so then I finished my exams a couple of days after my last exam. I'd only like a month into being 18, jumped on a plane for the first time in my life, never been abroad. And then I was in Tasmania, and I found myself under Mikey Lynch, of all people, when he was the pastor at Crossroads and Cornerstone. And that's where I did like an informal kind of unpaid traineeship with him. Yeah,
right. So literally a few days after your exams, you were like on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
training in ministry. That's
it was actually pretty mental. And yeah. Like I often say to Mikey, mate, what were you thinking? Like, you know, I was this absolute wild card. Like, you didn't know really anything about me. I don't really know anything about you. but it was just, it was really great. And I found doing a traineeship brilliant. You know, Mikey and just, you know, the MTS program just helped me get my head into the Bible. I got learning things and experiencing all sorts of different aspects of ministry. Like, I did my first sermon on Romans chapter 1, you know, for the power of the gospel, you know, it's first for Jew, first then for Gentile, like that kind of that verse. Yeah, and it was a fun ride also, just with the time of Crossroads. You know, if you'd heard anything of Mikey's story, I guess I dropped into a little bit of that. And so I used to have one-to-ones with Mikey for 2 hours, which was like my solid training things each week. And mm-hmm. And he'd have a smoke. That was hilarious, to have a trainee that would sit there and have a cigarette whilst I'd preach at him. yeah, that was a really, really lovely year. The quirks of the church was that it was met in a cinema, and that was just really fun and different. All the elders were really young, like 23. So that was exciting. There was a real buzz being there, as well as all ministry things I learned. And the fun thing they did when they sent me off, instead of like doing the sensible thing of laying hands on me and praying and sending me back to England or whatever, Mikey got me up the front, thanked me, prayed for me, pushed me over, and then called Stacks on, and everybody climbed out of their pew and just jumped on me. And so there we go. That's one way to do it.
That's awesome. Next citywide. Stacks on Andy. What sort of lasting impact did your year in Australia have? How did that shape the future for you?
Yeah, I think it was keen just getting my head into the Bible in a way that I hadn't. Although growing up in a solid gospel believing Bible you know, preaching church, which was wonderful, but there was something different about this. And I think that was the first time I really encountered just reading the scriptures in context, really doing biblical theology, learning how to do exegesis, and then learning how to communicate it. So that was excellent. I think also just being pushed to do crazy things. There was, you know, some really out there evangelism things we tried to do, like acting out at Salamanca with like, what is it like, circus acts. So like, there was even like one point where Mikey would like was juggling fire over me whilst I was lying down, and we were like preaching the gospel. So just
fire
just,
juggling gospel,
that's it. So just doing stuff like that is really formative. And then I think the other thing was I was steeped in a different culture, and so that helped me just know myself better and actually go, oh, I do that because I'm English, or I do that because my church culture does that. But what does the Bible say about that? And so stepping out of the culture to see that and feel that and experience that was really great. And then that was helpful then coming back into English culture to go, oh, right, now I see even more clearly what's Australian, what's English, and kind of who I am. And actually, I want to be a Christian, not just a just an Australian who's a Christian, who's kind of godly, if you know what I mean, or English person who's godly. Actually, going on, I'm a Christian. So that there basically was that identity formation, I think, that was really taking place there, and so that was massive and really good.
Cool. So obviously. A little bit of you was left here because you've come back. You didn't just spend a year in Australia and then return to England and live out your days. So what precipitated the move back and how slowly did the time back in the UK go before you could come back out?
Yeah, so I went back and I went back keen to just go into full-time gospel ministry. I just wanted to keep doing it. My elders at my church said, hold your horses. We want you to actually go and get a job. We want you to get experience. We want you to get a tent making job, you know, back up as well. And so I was like, okay.
To Burger King.
So I actually just started applying for everywhere and I got a job at Toy Shop. So the Early Learning Center is called in England. It's a massive toy shop chain. And just started being, you know, getting into management there. I did that for a year and a half. And then I emigrated to Australia because during that time I got engaged to Amy. And moved out here. And then by God's kindness, I actually got a job with the franchised Early Learning Center in Sydney at the time. And so just kind of continued in that job, managing, going up, all the time keen to do gospel work. And again, I would just take any moment as much as I could to just try and talk to people about Jesus. And just increasingly, there was just a deeper agitation of going, I know this work is worthwhile, secular work is important and God glorifying. But I just don't want to, I want to preach the word. And so that kept driving me and driving me. And then there was just a point where I was like, okay, I'm going to do an MTS again, because I only did 1 year, the program's normally two. And a whole load of time had passed, you know, it'd been, I don't know, 5 years or something. By this point, I'd been married, you know, lots of water had gone under the bridge. And so I was like, well, maybe it'll be good to refresh myself, retest myself, just to see, I've got all this passion, but I know I'm just a pretty ordinary guy. So like, can I do this? And so I did a traineeship at St. Thomas's in North Sydney. And that was good. It was different to the one down in Tassie. Anglican church.
Less fire, less stacks on.
Yeah. More reserved. Different church, different denomination, different group of people. There was other MTSs around. So there was a little cohort of us. There was about two or three others. And we all worked in the shed, which was really fun to have our own space. And so,
and hence why you now work in the shed.
No connection.
Also, you had quite a tall trainer, whereas, you know, Tasmanian trainers tend to be short. Manchester.
I had a fairly short trainer actually.
Did you? Oh, okay.
So that was really good. There was a whole bunch of things learnt there that was completely different to being in and around Mikey and the Crossroads Cornerstone cohort. So I was very thankful to God for all of that. And then I was like, yep, yeah, okay. I think I can do this actually. And so
before we get into what's next, yeah. I just want to, you're a bit of a black sheep. You came out on a gap year, but a gap between what? You didn't actually end up going to university like most.
You got me.
What was the decision behind that?
So I a gap year was just like a term. It wasn't necessarily you're gapping something. But yeah, I never went to university. I just never felt university was for me. I didn't really do very well at school. Just because I didn't really care much. I just liked talking to people and socializing and... Yeah, I spent a lot of time just doing that, really. I didn't really put much effort in.
So you were like, you know, Kim Kardashian of your school. You were the socialite.
But no money.
Yeah.
So I didn't go to uni. That just wasn't for me, really.
And so what comes next is actually quite a big surprise for you, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. So I knew that college was the best next step. If I was serious about a life of ministry, then I needed to find somewhere that would actually equip me for a life of ministry, that would actually put down those key theological foundation, those kind of crucial frameworks, those important kind of reference poles, so that I would be sustained for a life of faithful and hopefully fruitful ministry. And through all my deliberating, thinking and questioning, I chose Moore College. And the main reason for that for me was because I was aware that I was academically weak. And I only got into Moore College as a mature age student. Otherwise, it was going to be a lot harder for me to get in. Yeah. Because you dodge all like, or basically any qualifications. So that's the way in. Yeah, I dodged entrance, like I got into Australia and became a citizen through marriage. It's like the back door.
Yeah.
And then got in this way. Yeah, so
that's... So before you tell us about your college experience, you're currently the director of the Challenge Conference here in Tassie.
Yeah.
So you know a fair bit about sort of the benefit, the role of MTS in actually raising people up for ministry. How did that happen for you? Like, how did your MTS inform your decision to head to Moore College? How important was that in the process?
Well, I mean, it just stoked my fire. So there was simply that, is it just... As I did it, it gave me something to do. It showed me what I might be capable of. It showed me what I'm not capable of. Mm-hmm. And as I had the platform to do that, it just kind of affirmed it. So there's that element. And then I think the other element as well is how it helps is, and within that is that real testing ground, I think. That it does that, what are you good at, what are you rubbish at, and others watching you and giving feedback and going, yeah, that's good, that's great, or no, that's not great. So that all helped with that. And then I think the other main thing is with going into college, at least I felt like I could sit there and understand the lectures and contribute and receive and even write essays and things, because I was like, oh, when you talk about that theologically nuanced idea, because I've been in ministry world, I'm like, oh, I can begin to imagine what it would be like to try and explain that to a person, or how difficult it might be to apply that, or to go, oh, I can immediately see the practical application of that kind of theological idea. And so that's what MTS just did massively, which was really helpful. It kept it from just being theoretical. And so at the time, as it being all theoretical and concepts, you could ground it concretely. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Just before we hear about your college experience, Anna or Mikey, do you wanna pick Andy's brains, ask him a question? No, we're good.
I'm very excited to hear what you have to say about like the college experience after doing some ministry, because mm-hmm. I feel like I might end up being in a very similar boat.
There we go. Well, Andy, take it away.
I actually didn't quite catch that.
So Anna saying that she's thinking about the possibilities of college. She's really keen to hear about your experience.
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, okay. So I will take it away in that case. So yeah, that's one reason I chose more. I wanted to work on my weakness rather than work on what at least I thought was my strengths. And weakness was academic thinking and learning how to think. And I felt like my strengths were practical stuff. And so I figured, and came true at the back of college is that your kind of soft ministry skills, like your preaching, like how well you preach, and how well you lead Bible studies and those kind of things, you can learn those later and you can build on those later. And you can, it's easier to do courses even on those later. Whereas it's really hard to be steeped in theology. Again, like I said before, like having those foundations laid and those frameworks created and things like that, it's hard to do that after college. And so that's what I wanted to do. I found that more college, and I knew this going into it, is theologically rigorous.
Rigorous is the word, right? That's the word that everyone uses.
The word, it will make you sweat. But do you know what I found is that more college, it's hard on the head. That's true. But it also, the rigorous theology warms and kind of wows the heart. And it gives the hands tools for a life of ministry. And so it's not just this theological education where you are educated as a Christian ministry and you're braining all the time. It's like there's a heart alteration taking place because you're like, man, these guys are the best lecturers, right? Were those where you didn't know where the lecture had finished and the preaching had begun. And that's just awesome. Like every day, that's awesome. And it's tiring, not because the word work is hard and heavy, although it is, but because you're like, oh, that's just, right. So now I need to rethink about how sanctification works and what that means for my identity as a person. All right, and now we're on to the next lecture. And it's like, but what? And now you're like, oh, so I need to think about history. Oh, man, and that's why we do, that's why I think that way, actually, because of that historical thing that happened, because that, oh, man, what does that mean for, you know, future when I'm in a church? And we're on to the next lecture. So like, you know, there's all this deep, big stuff going on, which is great, but it's hard work.
So, what do you think challenged you most, and what do you think you enjoyed most in that college experience?
Yeah, I mean, a big challenge for me personally was I was learning how to learn. I was catching my tail because I hadn't been to university, and I had failed most stuff at school. So this was just all new to me, was to work. And especially because I'd been in a manager job, which is very concrete and practical for the last 5 years.
KPIs.
Yeah, it was really hard. And so I was chasing my tail a lot. I was, you know, playing catch up a lot of the time with so many of the other guys and girls, which were just brilliant students. So that was tough. But I'm thankful for God, for Amy in supporting me in that. Caring for me in that, and also particularly three mates. And this is a great thing about it, is you get friends for life there. And so Mark, Matt and Grant are very precious to me, and helped me get through a lot. So that's a great gift. And then I think the thing which all the stuff I've said before is what's helped me. In some ways it's hard to add to that. There's just a myriad of things of why it's really, really good. I think though, when it comes to ministry, and this is what I had thought about going in and what was true going through, was our theology drives our practice. And so we've got to make sure we get our theology right, because it will make your practice right. And if you just do lots of practice stuff, like I don't know where you're going to end up, but that is how churches and ministries become train wrecks. And so, that's what I wanted to go go hard on. And that's what I try and help the students with when it comes to things like events, is like, I need you to understand the theology behind gathering, because otherwise what we're going to do is not going to be great. At best, you're just not going to really know what you're doing, and you'll do it and it'll be nice. But like, that's not good enough for gospel ministry and gospel mission. Yeah.
So, out of that college experience, sometimes people might find themselves unsure about ministry opportunities, or unsure if, you know, ministry is for them in the end. You know, they've done their MTS and kind of had some practical experience. Maybe done some college. But for you, very evidently, you've stepped into ministry. What transpired to bring about the return to Tassie?
Yeah, that's a fun story and one worth telling. So, before I say that, though, I've got to tell you this other really cool thing to do with college. And college was described to me, and I think this is perfect. One of the lecturers, Andrew Sheedy, said, coming to Moore College is like doing a really long reading course that goes for 4 years. And what we're trying to do here is just help you read the Bible carefully, to slow down and read the Bible carefully. Now that's an overstatement, but the point is, if you know how to read the scriptures carefully, that is, handle them faithfully, relevantly, and clearly, then you're set, basically. And if you go to a college or you do a type of course that doesn't do that, then again, there's big risks there, I reckon. Back to the story that I was going to say. Yeah, so we're in fourth year now, and I've been working hard at trying to get involved in the Baptist church. So I want to go into Baptist ministry. That's my hope, is to be an assistant minister in a Baptist church. That's more where my convictions lie. I had many years of wrestling through believer's baptism and infant baptism and those kind of things. And so anyway, it panned out that it just wasn't going to be viable. Just the jobs and the interest and the state of the Baptist church, at least in the strong reformed evangelical side of things, which is, you know, where I'd align myself with. And so I got desperate. And it happened that one of the guys posted in our Facebook page just AFES jobs. Now, I didn't know what AFES was, apart from I knew that Mikey worked with students. Now, over the years, when I'd come down to Tassie, because Amy's parents live here, we'd occasionally grabbed a quick cup of coffee together. So we'd kept up a bit, but we weren't mates. We were just like, oh, hey, how you going? Good. All right. See you in a year and a half. Oh, hey, how you know. And so I emailed him and said, hey, can you tell me about this job position you're going with? And anyway, we started talking about it. And I was really umming and ahhing about it, because as I looked into it, I was like, well, I don't know what AFES is. What's AFES? What's uni ministry? I had no idea what uni ministry is. And I knew that you had to support raise. And I was like, there's no way I'm finding my own money. Thanks. I got a job where I'll get paid. Thanks. And so I was just like, oh, I don't want to do this. The Baptist thing's not working out. This is already annoying. And I'm not getting what I want. Even though for many years I'd been like, Lord, here I am, send me, you know, I'll do whatever you want. Will I? And it was actually when we were in a prayer triplet, and a guy was just praying for me about jobs, and he just mentioned that we're a slave for Christ. And there was something that just really deeply resonated with me when he said that. And as I pondered it, I thought, you know what? Your slavery is only good as your master. Like, that's the point. And so our slavery is good because our master is good. And so if our master is good and the slave work he's got us involved in is good, then that means if there's an opportunity to do something like AFES in Hobart, then it's got to be good. And I should like it because it's the master's work and that's good. And so that was a turning point where I was like, you know what, Lord, I need to change my heart on this. And so that's when things begin to turn. And as I got speaking to people, looked into it more, I just was like, you know what? Uni ministry is strategically important in ministry generally, but just in people's lives. That 18 to 24 year old window is so crucial for gospel proclamation. And so anyway, I went down for the interview and ended up taking the job. And so the whole process was just kind of God's rebuke, God's humor, God's providence, that all these years later, that somehow I would wind back up under Mikey in Tassie, where we didn't really want to go. And, you know, working alongside him. And so that was just bizarre. And all of it was a real kind of, well, we trust you, Lord. And then as I immediately got into the job, I just realized that, oh yeah, I'm actually quite a fit for uni ministry. And my just personalities a bit, my gifts a bit, and also just stuff I'd studied at college. I just did a bunch of projects on gathering, and it's like, oh, here I am doing events. And so that was just really wonderful to just sort of see all these things fall into place and going, oh, like, you know, God has actually, in his kindness, given me a job that's just kind of perfect for me. And then I think one of the biggest rebukes has been partnership, of actually going, actually, I love having to support, like raise my own money and be dependent on people. They can't go, but I can. They're not free, but I am. They have money, I don't. And the joy of getting together and then doing the work alongside them and sharing that is just it's just wonderful. And I love that, and I love my supporters, and I'm so thankful for them. And so that also has been a real rebuke as well, to just go, ah, okay. So
I keep wanting to ask you questions that, like, but you know, you keep just making these like gloriously beautiful statements that I can't bear to interrupt you. It's really great. Hey, so one of the questions that we ask people is is there things that you're still unsure about or things that you're still working through? In the context of this, you know, the ministry thing, you know, you wanted to do Baptist ministry, that didn't work out, now you're in campus ministry. Is there like, are you still sort of wrestling with working through your ministry vocation?
Yes, that's a good question. So I came down and my heart was only in it for about 2 years. I was like, I'll give it a couple of years and then I'll probably look to maybe move on. But as I got into it and I realized all those things, and I just saw the gospel opportunity and the gospel need in Hobart and Tasmania as a whole, and not only saw how important the uni ministry is, but how significant the uni ministry is for the entire state of Tasmania. Just my heart just kept getting like won by that. And just there was a point at the end of 3 years where I was like, you know what? I think if I gave myself to this for the next 10 years, I wouldn't regret it. And so that was a key moment for me to go, yeah, I love this. And I'm happy to keep doing it and I want to keep doing it. And I just, all my life, I had been driven to the next thing, you know, do the gap year, do the MTS, get the job, get the experience, do the MTS, you know, oh, go back to job because of I got away a year for citizenship, do more college, you know, get the job, level up in the job. But actually, just when I got here, I was like, yeah, I'm good. I don't feel like I need to have a different foreseeable future is here.
That's cool. That's great. So we are at the moment, you know, staring down the precipice of potentially a few years of cohorts of MTS apprentices. We've got Sibian and Mel Golbillin coming on next year, maybe some others in the pipeline. I'm wondering, Mikey's wondering if you can actually give us a bit of an insight into just what a cohort of apprentices is like. To what extent is it supportive, competitive, conflicting, lifelong friendships? Like, give us a little snapshot view into your cohort experience as an apprentice rather than your sole apprentice in Tassie experience.
Yeah, it's fun. And don't underestimate that. I think the one thing that I really love about just being in the uni fellowship team is that it's serious when it needs to be, but it's also fun when it needs to be. And I haven't ever experienced that in other ministry teams. And that's a real precious gift because it gives you, it keeps the right perspective. And so that's certainly true in my, at least my MTS experience was, you just got a group of mates and it's just, they're just nice, you get along, it's fun, it's enjoyable. And that's just a really important part of this work and just having a good experience. So like if you see a little cohort, you get in on it. Even if you're like, oh, it's a bit annoying for a year for plans, like get in on it because it will be well worth it. So there's that element. There's also just the, you get to wrestle through things together and just be frustrated together as well, and be like, oh yeah, Andrew, he's so annoying, he does all this, you know. You can have a little grumble and a little fighting together, and you know, it's cathartic, but that's good. That's like a part of that, actually, you know, working it out, thinking, growing together. And that's the same on theological stuff as well, is actually you get to have your own fun interactions and debates, and you're kind of all being paid as mates to hang out and fight a little bit about the Bible and learn things together. And it's like, I will do that for an afternoon with donuts, thanks. You know, but that's MTS, like that's a part of the training thing, and so that's really worth it. And
what kind of impact do you think the full-time aspect of apprenticeships has on that cohort experience?
Yeah, like I understand why people would do part-time, but you gotta do full-time. Like, it's just, there's just the constant rhythm and pattern and doing it of ministry that is just so hard to experience when you're part-time. And if you're going to do ministry full-time, well, that's what you're angling for. You got to experience, you got to practice it a little bit full time, because there's a different energy, a different tiredness, a different commitment, or all these kind of things. That's just, it's really hard to experience when you're part time. And that's actually a part of you growing in godliness and actually assessing yourself in ministry and actually having a real taste of ministry to go, yeah, well, when you go, God willing, go through college and come out the other end, mate, the stakes are up and it's just going to be like this. So knowing that you've grown into that, I think is really helpful. I'm struggling a little bit to just try and cast my mind back to,
sure.
I mean, it was just really lovely. Like, you know, we'd have MTS training together and that was just really cool. 9 o'clock, like 9 o'clock on Tuesday mornings was exegesis. And so it's just great just being the three or four of you with Simon Flinders, opening the Bible, doing some exegesis for 45 minutes together. And it's just really nice just doing with people, seeing how they think, how they operate, how they question. And you go, oh, you're really good at that. Yeah, I need to learn, do that better. And that's just all really helpful. So there is that healthy competition and learning and whatever that takes place. I think that's all I got on that.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So we're getting close to time, but we've got a few like other things to dig out. One thing that Anna was asked during her Humans of Uni Fellowship ended up resulting in this little backpack analogy that we seem to have carried through our Humans of Uni Fellowship ever since. And so I'm wondering what you would put in your backpack for people preparing for ministry or doing ministry. What do you think people should carry around in their backpack?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll start
like a with... book or a...
Yeah, I mean, a book would be... Graham Goldsworthy, Gospeling Kingdom, was really formative for me. Biblical theology, that's been a really great book. True Worship by Vaughan Roberts, which is what I do with the students, that's very relevant for events, but that was a formative book for me as well. There's been lots of people and things along the way, but there are a couple of books which I probably can clearly and quickly say yes to. I think I'd probably ask a question, and this is, I guess, more aimed for those who are maybe umming and ahhing about whether they should do an apprenticeship or how they should step up in ministry and those kind of options. And I think the question would be basically summed up by saying, why shouldn't you do ministry? Why shouldn't you do an MTS? Rather than why should you? I think I'd want to say that's the main question, but it looks like this. Do you have passion? And if you can go, yeah. Do you have time? And you go, yes. Do you have a willingness to just grow? And you go, yes. Do you have anyone who is saying, no, not yet? And if you can go, no, then I want to say, like, do it. Because I can't see any good reason why not. So that's probably the kind of question I would put in there. Yeah.
So some Nike shoes as well.
Sorry?
Some Nike shoes. So just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Nike shoes. That's a good one. Yeah. Nike shoes. A couple of books.
And the heavy burden of, if you can, then why don't you?
Yeah. And also just the kind of just do it is like, say yes. Just say yes to, like, put yourself forward for lots of things, because it's actually really good. Just say yes to lots of stuff within reason.
Well, Andy, this has been amazing. I've really enjoyed getting to know you better, even though I'm your coworker. I've really enjoyed today. I've got so many other questions I want to ask you, but I feel like that's a really great place to leave it. Thank you so much for joining us live, and thank you so much for those who have got to the end of this recorded video. Thanks so much for watching. There won't be a Humans of Uni Fellowship this Thursday. There are a few other events happening on Thursday, which stop us from doing Humans this week, but join us the following week for another Humans of Uni Fellowship. But until then, we'll see you later.